County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than up-and-coming Northamptonshire left-arm wrist spinner, Freddie Heldrich. So Freddie, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been good. Been at uni today. I'm studying at Loughborough Uni, and today I had a gym session, pre-gym session before off to Dubai tomorrow, and just finished 3 hours of training.
Sorry, I have to bring this up. Off to Dubai? You're going to Dubai?
Yeah. I'm off to Dubai tomorrow.
Wow, I can't say the same thing. A little bit envious of that, to be honest. The weather, it's improving here in England, isn't it? We are getting towards spring, but still a little bit nippy here in March, April time. But yeah, Freddie, how long are you in Dubai for?
We're going for 10 days. I had a quick look at the weather forecast and it's looking quite warm over there. So I would definitely be packing my sun cream.
What's the temperature looking like?
There's chat about mid-20s and higher, I think.
Oh, lucky for some, eh? Okay. Goodness me.
Not a bad life.
No, it's not. It's not. The life of a cricketer, pretty good sport, and obviously we'll divulge into the wonderful game as the day's podcast progresses. But no, that sounds absolutely class, Freddie. And hopefully it's an enjoyable and good trip for you as well. Hopefully you can learn a lot from your time out in the United Arab Emirates. But in terms of tonight's podcast then, just for the listeners out there, to provide you with a bit of context for tonight's discussion, basically I'm going to be talking to Fred about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large chunk of the podcast will focus on the wonderful and mystical art, which is left arm wrist spin. And then we'll finish off tonight's discussion with a lovely chat about Northamptonshire County Cricket Club. But Freddie, before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of your cricketing journey, if I may. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this spectacular game?
I think I got into cricket really young. My dad's a massive cricket nut. He's probably on there with the badger levels of knowing all the players around. I think growing up, one of my first memories being, I think I was 4 years old, I have little snippets of remembering the 2005 Ashes, watching on TV. I know it's quite hard to remember, I was so young, but I have small snippets of just kind of on the sofa watching that. For a little bit messing around in the back garden with my dad, my brother, my sister as well. And just memories of that kind of at first, just kind of trying to hit a ball and not being very successful. And I think as I got a bit older, I played all sports and cricket was one for me. I kind of found myself sitting, watching cricket in my spare time, Googling specific cricketers, just watching all these videos for hours on end, not doing any homework. But my cricket knowledge was up there. So I was kind of hoping it was a subject in cricket I could have taken. But yeah, it was for me, it's just grew up around Suffolk and just watching and trying to get watching my brother play as he got older, watching my dad play hobbled out a few times a year to play. And yeah, many memories of watching it and a few of just trying things in the nets and hoping it gets somewhere down the other end.
Well, I'll tell you what, Fred, it's a lovely journey into the game. So very much family orientated, community driven as well. And you mentioned that 2005 Ashes. Again, episode by episode, I'm more and more tempted to rebrand us as the 2005 Ashes podcast because it seems to crop up every single time. The influence of that series simply cannot be over-exaggerated. It has influenced an entire generation of English and Welsh cricketers. And I ask this to every single one of our guests who brings up that magnificent series. Freddie, if you could go back to 2005 and relive just one day from that iconic series, which day would you choose and why?
It's got to be the day where we won it all, really. I'd say the celebrations, and obviously there was so much fantastic cricket played everywhere throughout the whole series, but you've got to say that where we won it all right at the end, and when we claimed it all, and then just the buses and everything. And I'd love to just be able to be in London, seeing all those London buses going down with Freddie Flintoff and all these people standing there, some would say just a bit less sober.
Yeah, it's iconic, isn't it? Him and KP. Oh my goodness, that photo, that little snippet of video is one of the best video clips, to be honest, in recent English cricket history. You can tell that they weren't exactly, as you said, sober at that moment. They'd had a few to drink. But what a series. And I just remember, actually, from that fifth test, unfortunately, I didn't watch it live. I got into cricket a little bit later. I was more 2008, 2009, to be honest. But on that final day at the Oval, just the cheer after the umpires lifted the bails off was incredible. And you just think of the impact that has left. It made cricket more mainstream, didn't it, in this country?
It's always good, you know, being English. You got football, everyone gets into their football young because it's everywhere here. You got the Premier League and all that stuff. But for cricket, when you have something like that, the Ashes is the pinnacle. Yeah, I think, yes, everyone wants to play in a Test match or play in a World Cup, but the Ashes is the top of the top. Imagine being in a home Ashes and winning it. In front of your home, all your spectators, and your home crowd, there must be no better feeling than that in cricket.
100%. And it's a series which just means so much to both sets of fans, doesn't it? Both the English and the Australians. It's a series which has been played since 1882. There's so much history, so much tradition, so much pedigree associated with that series. As you said, everybody wants to win it. Unfortunately for us as England fans, this winter didn't quite go to plan, did it? 4-0 at the hands of the Australians, but they are an incredibly good side, and in home conditions, they're a very, very difficult unit to beat. With that being said, though, going back onto 2005, because there's so many incredible names, we could list basically the starting 11 of both sides. There were that many iconic cricketers present in that series. In those early years, I suppose, Freddie, aside from your family, you mentioned your dad there earlier, who in the world of cricket itself did you look up to in a role model kind of sense? Did you have any icons, idols, influences who you tried to emulate in those formative years?
It's got to be Shane Warne for me. Obviously, the sad passing of him recently, it's terrible news, but for me, Shane Warne. Growing up, as soon as I started playing cricket, obviously everyone starts bowling those little meadows that just about get down the other end. But for me, I was just amazed by what he did with the ball and how much he spun it. And it just kind of, it kind of started cricket for me. And when I got to the age of probably 8 or 9, I was then in the nets trying to spin it as far as I possibly could, and kind of started to realise this is a bit more fun than kind of ambling in and just landing it on a spot and hoping for a little bit of swing. And I didn't fancy running in 20 yards for 6 balls and over and then bowling a wide enough to do it for the 7th ball. So just for me, he was just a massive idol for me. And also not just how good he was at cricket, just I liked how kind of flair he was and how much of a character was. He was so competitive, and just for me, that's what I really liked. And obviously it's nice we got people just let go around their business and just do well, but I quite, as of my stupid hairstyle I had last season, I like to kind of stand out a little bit. And he had the same, he had his blonde dyed hair, and yeah, you could tell how much he loved it and just how hyped up he always was for cricket. And then he goes and does what he does, and just, yeah, he's impressed so many thousands and millions of people. So many people around the world would say Shane Warne is their idol, I reckon.
They most certainly would. And again, I suppose he was one of mine as well, because you talk about the art of leg spin. And let's be honest, in years that have come before Shane Warne, it wasn't really the art form, was it? Everyone wanted to be a fast bowler. Or if you wanted to go into spin, you became an off spinner and you just held up an end and you got wickets that way. He completely changed the entire perception of leg spin as an art form. And in terms of him, the character you mentioned there, what a character he was. absolutely remarkable fella. Always so humble as well, always had time for the fans. But something which was even more remarkable than the stats, and we can talk about those all day, 708 test wickets, 293 ODI wickets, second leading test wicket taker of all time. But he transcended the game. And that is something which in a game like cricket, which is technically the second most popular sport on the planet, it is still relatively niche, isn't it, in terms of the general public. Not everybody knows an Ian Bell or an Alistair Cook or an Andrew Strauss. And yet I guarantee that a large chunk of at least the British cricketing public, and even on a more global scale, know exactly who Shane Warne was. And that is his biggest legacy. He's going to be sorely missed. He really is. And we've seen some lovely tributes to the great man over the course of this last week. And I suppose on that similar line, Freddie, I have to ask, and this will be a tough question, what is your favourite ever Shane Warne moment? There's so many we can choose from. But if you could again relive just one of those days, one of those moments, one of those iconic wickets, which one would you choose and why?
Got to say, one of them's got to be the Gatting ball. Obviously, I think everyone would say that ball. It's a bit classic. And there's another one that it's not really well known, but he played in a Big Bash game and he got really competitive with, I think it was Marlon Samuels. And it just showed his kind of fire and determination. And I don't know why, it just kind of always stood out to me to see, it just showed how competitive he was and how he had that I'm going to win attitude and I'm going to keep fighting. I think for me, that was, it was quite a one out there that not many people remember, but I just remember that one because it showed that he was such a fighter.
I know exactly what you're talking about there. I'm not going to repeat the language that you used. It was the Melbourne Derby, wasn't it? The Melbourne Stars versus the Renegades. And again, I can't repeat what he said. For those who want to go and look at the clip, you can find it on YouTube. But another one from the Big Bash as well was when he commentated the wicket of Brendan McCullum. That just showed what a genius he was. It was a remarkable piece of bowling. Made McCullum, who, by the way, again, we talk about modern cricket. We talk about innovators and trailblazers. Brendan McCullum really has shaped and helped formulate the modern game in many ways. And he made him look basically like a second-rate player with that delivery. It was an absolutely beautiful piece of bowling. And then one more that I just have to touch upon. And again, for us as England fans at the time, we weren't celebrating this, obviously. I know the Australian cricketing public were. But the 700th wicket at the MCG, that could not have been more perfect if he tried. MCG, it's his home ground. He gets Andrew Strauss, who, for those who know, they had quite a bit of a battle over the years. Warne usually got the upper hand over Sir Andrew Strauss on the field. And to get it in that manner, it was a beautiful delivery. It just, again, it just goes to show what an incredible and remarkable cricketer he was. Just one of the all-time greats and one which will never, ever, ever be forgotten by all of us here in the game. And of course, he will be sorely missed by all of us here in the world of cricket. And Freddie, talking of leg spin then, and the great Shane Warne, who quite clearly had a massive impact on not just your own cricketing journey, but millions worldwide. What do you say was the reason that you became a leg spinner? You alluded to beforehand the fact that you didn't want to come charging in with those dibbly dobblies, having to bowl six or in some cases, seven balls if you're bowling wide. Why did you choose to become a leg spinner as opposed to a seam bowler or even an off spinner?
I was amazed by the fact that you could spin the ball as far as you could. I think, obviously, the stereotype is a wrist spinner spins it more than a finger spinner. And watching Shane Warne growing up, when you're seeing someone do basically what's thought is the impossible, really, you don't see many people landing it on the edge of the cut strip and then spinning back past the batsman. You just think, but I was always amazed by that. I thought, how are you doing that? How are you spinning it that far? I thought, I like to try, when younger, it was kind of, how silly can you make a batsman look? So yeah, it's all good just hitting them on the pad and getting them out LBW. But if you could spin one from seventh stump to hit leg stump, you're a bit like, everyone there, even the batsman just stand there like, wow. And that's what I always felt was amazing to me because, yeah, you probably could have done that off spin, but I felt that as a wrist spinner, just kind of seeing it fizz out the side of the hand, getting that revs and the dip and the spin, it just amazed me, the fact that you physically could spin it that far. Obviously, there's no one really who could spin it as much as he could, or as consistently as he could, but it just, that's for me, was what made me want to do wrist spin. Just do that, do the amazing, really.
Well, exactly. Leg spin as an art form allows you to do exactly that. It is a ridiculously difficult form to master, though, as I know from experience. The amount of times I've tried to land a leg break, which has unfortunately gone skyward into the atmosphere above us here in Warwickshire and then landed back on the roof of the net, I can't even begin to tell you how many times that's happened to me. So my career as a budding Rashid Khan or Shane Warne, unfortunately, never quite took off. And that's why I choose off spin as opposed to leg spin. But in terms of the art itself, Ruddy, what is your favourite delivery? In terms of variations, we know you've got a leg break, there's the flipper, you've got the slider, the top spinner, and of course the googly. What do you say is your absolute favourite delivery to bowl as a leg spinner?
I'm a big fan of the googly. I think because it's such a hard variation to bowl, it's so easy to get it wrong and it goes straight down, straight up. Could go anywhere. When you nail a googly, especially to a right-hander, for me, when you pitch it on kind of middle stump and it spins past the outside edge, there's nothing more satisfying than that. Obviously, you love to spin it back through the gate, but something about a googly, because of how tough it is, obviously bowling a leggy is really tough as well. And once again, loads can go wrong, but bowling a seriously nice googly, just the way it feels out your fingers and just rips past. I think for me, the googly's got to be the most satisfying delivery to bowl, because you spend hours in the nets. Growing up, you see people bowling them, they make it look easy, and you kind of start to try it, and you're like, oh my Lord, this is never going to get down the other end. How do they do it? And then eventually it comes out, and you go, okay, we're getting it halfway down the pitch, but let's try to get it further and further. And I reckon I must have bowled thousands and thousands of balls, just googly after googly growing up, to try and get it as much as I could. And then I think maybe one of the first times I got a wicket with it, probably when I was about 11, you just think, I've spent so many hours doing that and I've finally got that wicket with it. I think for me, that is the perfect, like, what I want to do. I love to bowl googly and get people out with it, because you spend so much time trying to get it good.
You see, that's interesting to me, because as a right arm wrist spinner, in particular to right-handers, I know that a lot of leg spinners would choose the googly because it castles the opposition and you get the stumps into play. But as a left-arm wristy to right-handers, as you said, it whistles past the outside edge. You almost have to flip the expectations, and it's the leg break which actually comes back into you as a right-handed batter. Why is that the case, Fred? I'd love to know this. Do you prefer that as a dismissal, or is it just because I suppose the leg break is a bit more of a stock ball as opposed to the googly, which has a bit more mystery about it?
I think for me, yeah, it's the mystery as well, because when they've played a straight bat and it's gone past them, you know you've tricked them. You know they're not picking you. You know they've got no clue. So it's not really in terms of getting the wicket with it. I think it's just the fact that there's nothing nicer than seeing a batsman not be able to pick you. And when you're seeing them have no clue and they're sliding past them and they're playing a missing, you're a bit like, okay, now I'm in the game. Now you've shown them the googly, I can then get them with the leggy through the gate. So it's all about setting up that wicket. And when you go two googlies and then they play a miss, maybe they prod an outside edge one a little bit, and they're a bit kind of prodding away outside, then you have that little gap where you can go for that leggy back through. And obviously there's nothing nicer than seeing one pitch fourth stump, rip back through pad, bat and pad and hit the stumps. But I don't know, I like the idea of the googly, because for me, yes, you can get wickets with it. You can get stumped, caught behind, caught slip, all these things. But it's just also, even if you want a leg stump, you can bowl them top of off, which I've seen Shamsi being a prime article for it. He's done it loads. I think it's just for me, my favourite delivery, because of how tough it is. And it's where you start it off, really. If you get it out early doors and it tricks the batsman, then they're thinking about it the whole time.
Absolutely. Well, I must admit, I like the answer. I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting the leg break, because as an aggressive leg spinner, people do like bringing the stumps into play. But I suppose with the googly as well, in terms of the biomechanics, surrounding the googly as a delivery, it actually goes against what your body naturally does in terms of the rotation of the shoulder. That's why it's such a difficult delivery to actually master. And that's what I don't think people quite understand. When you go with off spin, you're going with the natural rotation of your shoulder. With googly, you go against it. So it does wear out your shoulder. We've seen those issues with Adil Rashid, for example. But when you nail it, when you get it absolutely spot on, it looks brilliant, doesn't it? And as you said, it really does outfox a batsman if they aren't picking you. But in terms of the flip side, because we've spoken there mostly about the positives associated with wrist spin and the good bits associated with the art form, obviously there are times as a spin bowler where you're going to get absolutely dispatched. You're going to get hammered. You're going to go for a lot of runs. Freddie, what's the most difficult aspect of leg spin in your opinion? What are the most, you know, tough aspects of the skill itself?
I think with leg spin, in my opinion, it's the hardest form in the whole of cricket, the hardest thing to do. And as I said earlier, there's the smallest thing. Like if the ball rolls off the finger slightly wrong, it could go anywhere. And everyone who's tried to bowl leggies know how tough it is. I think for me, there's a lot of negatives as well. It's quite demoralised. Like it kind of, yeah, it crushes you a little bit because you can go from bowling really well one day and then maybe you go play for your club on the weekend and it's a bit wet and the ball's a bit slippery, you can't grip it. And then you think, oh God, like I'm not going to get this anywhere out of my hand. And yeah, you're always going to get whacked eventually. Whatever you do, wrist spin, off spin, bowling pace, you kind of, it's one of those things you just have to stick with because there may be at the start more bad days than good days, but then it's better that you get, the more good days come up, then you get to 50-50 and then you end up having 75% good days, 25% bad days. You're always going to have a bad day, so you have to kind of just accept it and you've got to learn from it. You've got to know, what am I going to change from that bad day? Like, why did it go to a bad day? Maybe I was just unlucky. Maybe I was bowling well and I was just getting whacked. Sometimes it's not your fault you had a bad day. Sometimes it's just really good players. You know, cricket, there's an element of luck in the game. And it's all about how to cope with these bad days and put them in the rearview mirror and get on with it.
Absolutely. And again, that's a lesson which you learn with experience as your career kind of gets underway. And in terms of yourself, Freddie, how do you personally deal with that? Because I imagine at times it is frustrating. Every bowler gets frustrated, especially when you think you're bowling well and the ball's coming out nicely, and yet the opposition batsman is taking you, you know, to the cleaners around the park. How do you actually deal with, you know, those failures at times and kind of deal with the weight of expectations as well? How do you maintain that even keel in a cricketing capacity?
For me, I've been through many downs, quite a lot of downs. I'm speaking like I'm an old man and I've been playing for years, but I'm only 20 and I've only had one kind of season as a pro. But I've had a lot of downs, injuries, and I had the issues with the dreaded yips beginning of last season.
Could you touch upon that in a bit more detail, if possible, Fred? Obviously, if you're comfortable with that, because it's something which another Northamptonshire spinner, Simon Kerrigan, actually went through quite famously in a test match. Do you know where that kind of originated from in the first place?
It's a strange one, really. Obviously, you don't want anyone to go through it. And I think for me, I think what may have caused it was a bit of a burnout, playing a bit too much cricket, because I went from playing a season here, then playing a season in Australia, and then coming back here. So I had no break at all. I think I had 2 weeks break before I flew out to Australia to do the Darren Lehman Academy. And I went out there, started well, felt good. And then we got a few months in and I just couldn't bowl. I think I remember my last game in Australia, I bowled one over. And I think I bowled one delivery that was legal. My first two balls, I think one went over the keeper's head. I think one went somewhere to 45 to fine leg, and then I kind of thought, oh God, started bowling the rest of the deliveries off one step and I just couldn't get it down the other end. I had to say to the captain, I can't bowl this, I've got to stop. And it was a terrible time for me. I think at the time I thought, oh, it's just a bad day, like I'll wake up and I'll go do it again, it'll be fine the next day. But I started to like not be able to picture myself bowl, and I couldn't run in. I felt terrible. So I stopped playing cricket out there for a bit. I trained, but weirdly enough, I felt fine in the nets. I could do it all in the nets, but as soon as I got over the boundary and onto the pitch, I had no clue. And came back to England, thought, yeah, I'll be fine. I'll crack in. It was my first season playing twos. So I said, yeah, I'm available. I'll play the first game. I think we played against Derbyshire, twos for Northants, and same again. I didn't know how to let go. It wasn't as bad, but I just started bowling a lot of full tosses, a lot of half trackers, and never really getting a ball anywhere near a good length. I probably made the mistake of playing a couple more three-day games after that, rather than just going, I'll take a break. And then eventually I spoke to Graham White and Kevin Innes, my old academy coach. And I just said, I can't do this. I need a break because I was seeing cricket everywhere. I needed a break from it. So I took, I think, 3 to 4 weeks out of the game. I took about a week of nothing, no training, nothing. I didn't even watch cricket. I turned it all off, just kind of forgot about cricket. And then after that week, I said to my academy coach, I want to start try bowling again. I went and every morning for 3 weeks, I was in the indoor centre bowling off one step for about 2 hours, trying to learn how to bowl. It was like learning how to bowl again. It was tough, really tough, but we worked through it. We bowled more balls than I've ever bowled in 3 weeks. And I remember my first game, I came back and played for the academy side against Hunt's second team or something. My first ball I ran up and it was a double bouncer. And I thought, oh no, we're not over it. And then suddenly it started getting better. I started getting fuller and fuller. And I thought, okay, I feel all right here. And then a week later, Graham White said, do you want to play in the second team T20 stuff? And I said, I'd love to. Like, I'm ready. I feel like I can do this. We'll just give it a go. Went out, and I think I played against Gloucester in Bristol at their ground, and I bowled the best I bowled probably ever. And I came out. It was a day where played 230, but I came off with two for not many while everyone else is going at tens and stuff like that. And I kind of thought maybe this is all gone. And then just kept playing each twos game, kept taking a few wickets. And then next thing you know, I was heading up to Durham and I made my debut. And it's just like that. I didn't know. I kind of thought I was scared that I wasn't going to play at all that season, but I think it just all clicked at the right time. And luckily I had a very good season for me.
Well, you most certainly did, but that's a lot to deal with. As a young spinner, the yips is absolutely horrible. For those who don't know what it is, it's also known as performance anxiety. So that's probably why you weren't feeling it so much in the nets. It's all about when the bright lights are on you and you're expected to perform, and you just can't. It's all psychological. You physically cannot release the ball. There's a similar thing in darts, which is known as dartitis, which is where you'll have these professional darts players, and they have been throwing darts their entire life. All of a sudden, they can't even throw one. It is one of the most difficult things that you can go through in professional sport because it's like a mental block, isn't it? Would you describe it in a similar way, actually, Freddie, as someone who's experienced that? How would you actually describe the feeling of the yips and the difficulties associated with it?
Yeah, I'd say it's a block. It's a really weird feeling because you've spent so many years doing something and then it's a bit like you've woken up one day and you've never done it. And for me, it was the thing I felt one of the hardest was actually running into bowl. I didn't know where my feet were going. I was stuttering. I was all over the place. And then when I got to the actual run up bit, I was in a terrible position. Arm was going nowhere. And then obviously you let go of the ball and it goes miles in one direction. You think, oh no. And obviously you only really focus on the outcome. But for me, it was the whole thing, the run up, the feel. For me, I'm a big cricketer when it comes to feel as a spinner. I feel like I like to know. Sometimes I'll say I don't feel very good today when I'm bowling, but someone will say it's coming out lovely. But the way I feel it leave my fingers, the way the ball kind of zips out of your hand, it's all a big feel kind of thing for me. And it was strange. Yeah, it is definitely a mental block. And I remember speaking a lot to Simon Carrigan, I get about it, because obviously he went through the same thing, and his was a lot harder than mine was, and obviously he's doing really well now. Teammate mine doing fantastic, and he was great for me to have him there. And I also spoke to a lot of psychologists, and I also did hypnotherapy where I got hypnotized to see if that would help. That was a really strange experience. I don't remember the whole thing. Apparently I was in the room with him for an hour and 20, but it felt like I was in there for about 10 minutes. I think I might have been asleep or something.
It's interesting you mention that, actually, because I did want to touch upon this. How did you actually deal with the road to, I suppose, recovery after that? Because it is a horrible thing to go through. And I remember Simon Kerrigan's really quite vividly. That was really, really difficult to watch, because up until that point for Lanx, he had been absolutely fantastic. He had more than earned that position in the England Test side. And then it came to the day and he just looked like a completely different player. And you could just see there was something massively wrong, and he didn't play since. It's such a shame, and it's brilliant seeing him back in county cricket and performing well for Northants. It's great to see him back after a couple of years away from the circuit. But Freddie, how did you come back from that? Because it's a tremendously difficult thing to go through at such a young age. And you mentioned the chats with Graham White. You mentioned the chats with Keggs. You mentioned hypnotherapy. I'm going to be honest, I wasn't expecting that, but each to their own. How did you put in those steps to get you back to bowling at the level that you know you're capable of?
Well, it's always been a dream of mine to be a professional cricketer, and I wasn't going to let a mental block or the yips end my cricket career at the age of 19 at the time. For me, the thing that kind of, obviously I went through that week where I couldn't even think about cricket because it was a tough time and I didn't even want to speak about it or anything. I just kind of turned everything off. But once I got through that, I looked at myself in the mirror and said, you're not letting, if your cricket career is going to end, it's going to be because you physically can't do it. Like you're broken, your body can't do it. But I've never had any issues mentally ever. And I wasn't going to let a mental block end my career at the age I was. So it was a big motivation time, and it was good. I was back home seeing my mum and dad, and they were really helpful with it. And it was tough for them to, obviously my dad didn't really know about it. He didn't understand much about it, but he was good because he said, like, we kind of worked as a team. My dad was like, we've got this, my mum as well. And I think for me, it was the kind of fire inside of me to still want to be a professional cricketer and do as well as I can that kind of powered me through it. Obviously speaking to psychologists and hypnotherapy, strange thing, but well, doing all these things, all these chats, I knew that once I got through this, I could keep going. I feel like speaking to Keggs, he was like, once you've got through it, you're through it, you know how to fix it. So I felt that all I'm going to do is I've got to get through this. And I knew it was going to take a lot of effort, knew it was going to take a lot of cricket balls bowled, and I was just really motivated to do it, and I was just driven, really, really driven. I kind of got through that week of moping around and being upset about cricket. But after that, I said, when you see all your mates and stuff playing cricket, scoring runs, taking wickets, I was like, that should be me. I should be out there doing well. I want to get that contract at the end of the year. I want to be a professional cricketer. So I just said to myself, like, we can do this, Freddie. Like, let's go do it. And just worked my ass off to get out there and kind of get it right.
Well, I'll tell you what, Freddie, I've got an awful lot of respect for that, because it's a lot to go through as a young cricketer, but fingers crossed that period of your life now is done and it never returns, because the yips, you don't wish it upon anyone. Really, really difficult to watch. And yeah, goodness me, I'm very, very lucky that I haven't actually experienced that. I suppose I'll never be a professional cricketer, but you know, even in village cricket, it'd be tremendously difficult to watch and obviously to go through as well. So hopefully that does not return, touch wood. And talking of Northants then, Freddie, because you've mentioned the likes of Graham White, who's been a stalwart. In fact, I think he's the longest serving player at Northants in that current side, if I'm not mistaken. I think there was a stat about that the other day. Then you've got Simon Kerrigan, of course, and you've got that entire club. And we've had quite a number of the Northants lads on to our podcast. They're a lovely club. Again, very community-driven, community-orientated. Got some great fans as well. How did the move to Northants materialise in the first place? Because you'd spent the majority of your cricket career up until this point in Suffolk, in and around East Anglia. So how did the move to the East Midlands come about in the first place?
Quite a strange one, actually. I was playing for Suffolk growing up since under 10s. Got through the age groups till about under 17s when I was about 16. And then, actually, the year before, when I was 15, I went and played in this tournament at Bromsgrove. It was Suffolk, Lincolnshire, Worcester, and Oxfordshire. And it's probably the best few days of my life. I think I went out there and played Oxfordshire first, took a 5-for, played Lincolnshire the next day, took a 7-for, then played Worcester the last day and took a 9-for. And then from there, it was a pretty good few days. Though I would say the wicket was pretty spinner suited. I think it kept a little bit low and spun a bit square. But I was with Suffolk. We obviously had a partnership with Essex growing up, and I was on the EPP, which was fed into Essex, and did my few training sessions and matches against the academy and stuff growing up, and never really got a look in with them. I think I always did well enough against them. I felt a bit hurt by it, and then they didn't put me into play for Bunbury. I never went to that, and after that I kind of realized I'm not going anywhere with Essex here. They're not even messaging me, emailing my dad or anything saying we want him to play. So then I got in touch with Worcester and I said, hi guys, I took a 9-for against you guys last year, can I come trial? Obviously in a bit nicer way. They were like, yeah, we remember, can you come trial? And I said, yeah, I'll be there. Nice 3.5-hour drive for my dad. Drove us to Malvern College, I think, and trialed at the academy there. And I think that interested a few of them. The academy coach said, we'll see if we can get you in a few games in the summer and go from there. And then I went back to school, and the head of cricket actually put me in touch with Northants because they had a little link through Rob Newton, who was at my school years before me, was obviously a pro at Northampton at the time. And they said, yeah, come have a trial. And then after one trial, they offered me an academy contract straight away, and I kind of just jumped in from there.
Wow, fair enough. First trial. It's not often we hear that on the podcast, to be fair. It usually takes people a few attempts to get into county cricket, so obviously they must have been quite impressed. I'm guessing you made a decent impression in that trial then, Freddie.
Yeah, it came out pretty well. I think obviously it was obviously a group of about 15 of us, a few other lads I played at minor counties, all trialing, and I was lucky enough to bowl to one of the boys who I've grown up playing against, and I knew he couldn't pick the googlies, so I just ended up bowling him googlies every ball. So I kind of went against his weakness, but I think they were impressed that I could bowl a googly at the age of 16. And yeah, obviously being a left-arm wrist spinner, that really helps. I ask myself the question, if I was a normal leg spinner, would I be where I am? I'm not too sure, but being a left-arm wrist spinner definitely helped massively with the lack of us around. So I think, yeah, it was a successful trial for me.
Yeah, most certainly was. Sounds like it as well. Always helps when you've got someone there who can't read you. As a spin bowler, does make things a little bit easier. And you mentioned about left-arm wrist spin as an art form, because we are seeing a little bit of a resurgence in the craft itself in county cricket right now. Obviously, we've got a fan favourite here from the County Cricket Podcast, a certain Jake Lintott from my county of Warwickshire. You've got yourself. Tom Hindley from Sussex, if I'm not mistaken, is also a young left-arm wrist spinner. So definitely someone to watch out for heading into the future. Why do you think there has been a bit of a resurgence in county cricket for left-arm wrist spinners, Fred? Do you reckon it is because there's something different about it in the world of matchups as well? Let's be honest, it gives teams something completely different. Do you think that those are factors behind this renaissance of the art form, or do you think there's something else at play when it comes to counties wanting to invest in young left-arm wrist spinners?
The lack of it has a massive part to play. Being there, not many of us around, I feel that it's interesting. A lot of batsmen say it's tough to face a left-arm wrist spinner because you don't face any. Everyone could say, oh, it's just leg spin, but left-handed. But the ball spins the other way predominantly. And I think, I feel you're seeing a few more on TV. Obviously, Shamsi tearing up, Lintott taking it, tearing up. Seeing more of them come around, I think more people are starting to realise that, okay, I'm a left-arm spinner. I don't have to be a left-arm finger spinner. I can be a wrist spinner. And for me, growing up, a lot of people were pushing me in the direction of a finger spinner when I was really young because of it's a lot easier to coach. And me being the tough kid I was, like pain in the ass, I stuck to a wrist spin. But I think there's more knowledge on it now. More coaches know more about wrist spin in general. I think it's something I'd like to see more people growing up and doing. It's a great skill to be able to do. Obviously, I wouldn't say I'm anywhere near perfect yet with it. I'm far from it, but it's a great skill to do, and there's nothing more satisfying when you can do it well.
Well, there isn't, and that is the beauty of leg spin bowling, isn't it? It is making your opposition batter look a bit silly. That's why it's such a fantastic skill to possess, and yeah, long may it continue, actually. I like this upwards trend when it comes to left-arm wristies, because I think back historically, my county of Warwickshire had Brad Hogg, the Australian left-arm wrist spinner. We've seen in recent years the likes of Darcy Short, Lakshan Sandakan as well, from Sri Lanka, one of the all-time most legendary left-arm wrist spinners, and no, I'm not talking about Michael Bevan, is Paul Adams, Mr. Frog in a Blender from South Africa, very unorthodox action. And there is just something, again, quite mystical and magical about left-arm wrist spin because we don't see it that often. It really does encapsulate that word unorthodox. There's something really quite special about it. So, yeah, long may continue. I want to see more left-arm wrist spinners out there. If you are a young left-handed batter or bowler, take up the skill. And hopefully one day you could end up in county cricket. Who knows what life will have in store. But Freddie, talking of Northants in particular then, let's talk from a playing perspective now in terms of your first 11 career with the Steelbacks. And let's talk about your debut, because there aren't many better places to start, to be honest, than with your first game. So what were you feeling on that day? Just how momentous, how special of an occasion was that for you to walk out onto that field and play for Northamptonshire County Cricket Club?
Oh, the feelings were, there were many different feelings, actually. I remember the morning, obviously it was an evening game, the morning of the day we were allowed to go into Durham and go get coffee or something. And I actually messaged a couple of friends who went to Durham Uni, and I went and met up with them just to see how they're doing. I hadn't seen them in a while. And they said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to probably run drinks out for the game later. Because obviously I had no idea that I was going to play. And they said, oh, we're going to the Invades. Because obviously it was an Invades event. And they were like, we're going. And I said, well, when I'm running my drinks on, I'll give you a wave. And they said, well, we dress as bananas in the crowd. You'll be able to see us. And then walked up to the ground, went to the nets, got loose. Still no idea that I was going to play. Just did the normal. I bolt a couple batters, let them hit a few balls. I'm bowling the nets, got Ben Stokes standing there, one pad on, hitting the ball hundreds of metres. The crowd are starting to get busy. And then Rips came up to me and goes, Freddie, congratulations, you'll make your debut today. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. Really didn't expect it. I was shocked. I said, okay, well, I need to go bowl a few more balls because I need to, for me, I love to bowl as many balls as I can for a game. I'll probably bowl 100 plus balls before a T20 game just to kind of get rid of all those bad balls out, hopefully. And I went and bowled another 20, 30 in the middle with a Lids mitting. And I still couldn't really believe it. I was just standing there and the crowd's getting bigger and bigger. All these drunk students are like steaming in. I'm thinking, no, this can't be. So we do the little huddle for the warm-up, obviously get the cap presentation and a nice clap and everything. And I was still a bit like, this is not really happening. Just sitting there pinching myself slowly. Then you see the team sheets go up and I see my name at the bottom. I go, okay, now let's get a little bit more realistic here. And then we run upstairs, get dressed, and I put my clothes on and walked out and got on the pitch. And yeah, I was stunned. I had no clue. I didn't know really. I was kind of a feeling, I felt a little bit sick, actually. I think for me, I thought, oh God, stomachs, butterflies everywhere. And I'm standing at, obviously we opened up with, it was Mohamed Nabi came on early. And Ben Stokes comes in, the crowd go absolutely mental. And they're like, oh God, just the bloke you want to make your debut against. Watch Ben Stokes go whack it everywhere. And then I come on and I bowl one over North 36 because Ben Stokes hit me out of the ground. And I'm standing at back of point with, I think it might have been Rob Keogh at point. And Nabi bowls one, he reverse sweeps it, and it flies between us. Like, I literally blinked and it hit the ropes. And I thought, oh, crap. Like, these guys hit it a little bit harder than what I'm used to. And then I saw him, he got out, and I thought, okay, this is feeling a bit better. And then we got out of the power play. Rosso was like, Freddie, you're on. Oh, wow, okay. I'm standing there. My first two balls I run in, and I didn't even think I'd let go of it. I kind of had to be a bit amazed to see it go down the other end. And it was they were a lot slower than what I usually bowl because the nerves, I just couldn't feel anything. And I kind of felt a bit better, eased into it. And it was nice having Nabi to my left. I think I got on really well with him and spoke a lot to him. It's nice having him, but it's also not because he makes cricket sound too easy. He's like, just go do this. Just bowl a googly now. I'm like, Nabi, I can't feel my fingers. The butterflies are everywhere. He's like, yeah, you've got this. Easy, easy. Googly, googly. I was like, oh, God. And then I got the wicket. And as soppy as it sounds, I thought I could have cried. I got the wicket. And unfortunately, watching the replay, the camera doesn't see it. But everyone comes steaming on. All the 12th man, everyone comes steaming onto the pitch. And I'm getting tackled. I think I've got someone on my back. As far as I think, I get flattened. And as far as I get steamrolled by the guys. But the feeling was unreal. I just couldn't believe it. I was still standing there, like, after just pinching myself in, and no, we're gonna wake up eventually, this is not going to be real. And yeah, as I said, I'm just a bit soppy to say, but I thought I could have just burst into tears of happiness because it's something I've dreamt of my whole life, playing a professional game, and to get a wicket on debut is even better. And then when you and then when the next bats walk in and I stand at the top of my run up and look at the massive scoreboard and it says Ben Rain bowled Freddie Heldrich, I thought, wow, that's what you like to see. And then I've got Nabi in my ear again, bowl a googly, so I was like, okay, I'll bowl a googly. And it slides past Sean Dixon's outside edge and I thought, okay, I'm feeling pretty comfortable here. But yeah, it was just, even after the game, my phone was blowing up and obviously if I didn't really care about my friends at the time. It was more me and my dad. And yeah, obviously I rang him 5 minutes before I went out on the pitch just to let him know I was playing. And he just said, be cool, do what you can do. Like, you know, you trained hard, you can do it. And I went out and did it. And yeah, the feeling was unreal. I was speechless.
And for good reason as well. Because especially with your cricketing journey, I suppose you'd gone through those difficulties beforehand as well. With the yips, that must have been an incredibly vindicating and satisfying moment, mustn't it? Going out onto that field, making your debut when you didn't even expect to. And did you actually meet up with your mates who were dressed as the fancy dress bananas at some point? Did you go over and celebrate with them?
Yeah, walk around the boundary. And I was standing at 45. I think it was to someone, I can't remember, it was bowling, a seamer. And I just looked to my left. They're literally like 100 metres out. I was like, no. I was like, because I saw these like three bananas sitting next to each other. Like, I was like, it can't be them. And they just start waving at me. And obviously I didn't know it was them. So I just waved back. And then they rung me after the game. They were like, did you see us? I was like, yeah, you're the bananas. And yeah, walked around and saw them all. And yeah, obviously it was COVID times. So I had to be careful. But yeah, it was great to have so many. And then weirdly enough, I was looking on social media and I think I was tagged in about 15 different Snapchat stories. And there were friends I went to school with and people I grew up with there as well. Didn't know they were going to be there. But it was mad to see all these people that I've grown up with and playing cricket with or just going to school with were also there. So quite a lot of people I knew were there for my debut while my parents weren't.
Oh, that's unfortunate for your parents. But as you said, They've still been incredibly involved, haven't they? And you have a lot to thank them for, to be honest, in terms of the support and help that they've given you to get you to that point. And I bet they must have been absolutely proud as punch watching that. And in terms of the wicket itself, nice bit of bowling, I must admit. And this is going to be a tough question, actually, Freddie, because there's eight to choose from in county cricket in terms of 2021 wickets for North Ants. Would you say the dismissal of Ben Rain was your favourite? Or did another one from that season top that one?
It's between two. Oh, actually, no. It's between three. Obviously, Ben Rain one, first one's always got to be the best. Mm-hmm. The one I got against Glamorgan in the one day game, I think it was Tim Rheingold through the gate. That was probably the most perfect left arm wrist spin ball I could bowl. I think North Ants posted that, and then I saw Shamsie comment on the post. I thought, wow, I got him noticing it, him impressed. I thought, this is pretty cool. And then I think the Sam Hain one at Edgbaston.
I was there for that.
Yeah, that was a pretty special one, because what a big name player, what a great player he is. And obviously at Edgbaston, what a ground, pretty loud crowd. But yeah, I think that's got to be up there as well, because I watched about the video and nice celebration, big appeal, big celebration. Yeah, I was pleased with that one, being the category of player he is.
He's class. And we had him on the podcast quite recently, to be honest, a very, very entertaining chap indeed. Had some fantastic stories, and I know exactly the dismissal. It was a leg break, wasn't it? That just came back sharply into his pads, LBW. Am I right in thinking as well, Freddie? It might not have been Sam, but did you not get a couple of wickets against our second 11 as well?
I got Sam out again in the second.
It was Sam. I thought it was.
It was that kind of a second, first team kind of warm-up game.
Right.
We both put out basically a first team, obviously just at a club pitch. I bowled him that game. So I'd like to say I've got a, I can't say it, a bit of an upper hand, but he'll probably smoke me next time I come up with him.
Yeah, you have to be careful as a bowler to say that, yeah. Because literally the next game, they come out and they absolutely tonk you all about all over the place. But no, fair enough, three excellent wickets. I remember the one to Rheingold as well, absolute jaffer, to be fair. And yeah, it was a pretty good first season, wasn't it? I've just got some statistics, actually, for the listeners out there. In terms of the T20 Blast, five wickets at 23.40 with a 6.5 economy rate. That's incredibly impressive. You were the second most economic bowler for the Steelbacks, behind only Mohammed Nabi, who finished with an economy rate of 6 runs and over. So that's not bad. I can see why North Ants is, you know, trying to develop you as a T20 prospect. And then in the 50 over stuff as well, three wickets, average of 50, and a 7.5 economy rate. So in terms of the 2021 season, the T20 Blast was fantastic. The 50 over, I'm guessing by your own admission, Freddie, could have been better. But in terms of that first season in county cricket as a young left-arm wrist spinner, how would you describe that in words? How would you sum up the 2021 county season in your own words?
I'd say, for me, my main word would be it's a start. I think I'm not done yet. That's what I would like to say. Like, I want it to go on more, and I want to take more wickets, and I want to play more games. I'd say it's the start to hopefully more. And obviously, we don't know how the season's going to go. I might not play any games. I might not get picked, but we don't know, and we'll see what happens. And I'd love to come back after playing all 12 of the Blast games, taking two a game or something. But we never know what's going to happen. And I'd love to say that this season is going to be really great, but it's cricket. Can't predict it. And I just want to take every chance to get.
Well, with that outlook in mind, then, let's talk about 2022 then, almost as a final, quite profound question to wrap up tonight's episode. You mentioned there about potentially not playing, but let's say you do in 2022. And I'm going to be honest, in the T20 Blast, you should do. Let's be completely honest, 6.5 economy rate. I'd be very, very surprised and shocked if Sads didn't actually pick you in the 11 with an economy rate that's that good. But in terms of 2022 as a season, what are your aspirations from a cricketing perspective? Obviously, from a team perspective, you want silverware. You want trophies. It's what every single cricketer wants. You want your hands on a Royal London One Day Cup or the T20 Blast or the County Championship. But is there anything in terms of, from a personal perspective, per se, that you want to achieve heading into this season? Maybe not necessarily in terms of milestones, but even if it is becoming a regular fixture in the North Ant starting 11, do you have your eyes set on a particular goal heading into this upcoming county season?
This season, I think obviously my favourite format to play is T20, and that's the one that I want to do. Obviously, I want to do amazing. I want to do great in all of them, but my eyes are very focused on T20 cricket. I'd love to be able to, obviously, I think for me, the biggest aim, obviously, takes a lot as the team. I'd love to make it to finals day, and I'd love to be there at Edgbaston, full crowd, getting abused by the fans, probably having a stupid haircut or something. But I'd love to be at finals day, and I'd love to be a first pick in the T20 side. I'd love them to say, first game, Freddie, you're in straight away, and then go from there. I'm excited to have a name and a number on my back for the first time, because playing all those games I played last year, no name or number for any of them. Getting a bit of stick from a couple of Lancashire fans for having no name and no number. But I'm excited to go out there and kind of feel like I belong, rather than be that kind of academy kid who's had a couple of good games. So I want to go out there and not just be known as that kind of youngster. I kind of want to make a name for myself, and I'd love to play every single Blast game. But obviously, with form and everything and pitches being seamer friendly rather than spinner friendly, it might not happen. But yeah, I'd love, for me, the whole team, we'd love to win, obviously, win the Blast, but I'd love to go and play as many games as I can in that tournament and hopefully go well.
Well, I'll tell you what, Freddie, it goes without saying, but myself and everyone here at the Counter Cricket Podcast are wishing yourself and Northamptonshire all the very best of luck heading into this upcoming county season. I've got no doubt that we'll see you in the T20 Blast. I think it's a matter of when and not if, to be completely honest. But in terms of the season itself, honestly, it's just got the makings of such an enthralling county season. You look at the overseas players. North Ants, for example, you got Jimmy Neesham, haven't you, for the T20. So he's going to be a very, very good signing indeed. There's lots of domestic talent on display. 2022 has got the makings of a very, very memorable county season. And fingers crossed, Freddie, you can contribute to that in some way, if that's in white ball, red ball, whatever. Fingers crossed that North Ants do give you a proper chance to showcase your skills heading into this upcoming season. But Freddie, I mean, that is a perfect place, I think, to almost bring proceedings to a close for today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast, the proverbial stumps, shall we say, for today's recordings. So in terms of just final words, Freddie, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Little shout out to Millie Champion Hall. Just recently signed with them, obviously this new sponsor. And all my social media is just my name, Fred Heldrich, and that's it. Nothing more than that.
Well, there we go, folks. If you want to go and follow Fred on social media, we will, of course, leave the links to those in the description below. Go and follow those at your own discretion. I mean, we do, personally, on our channels. And yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be watching Freddie in action for North Ants this season, taking a few wickets with that left arm wrist spin. But Freddie, just one final thing from me for tonight's episode. It's just a massive thank you, really, for taking the time to come on. It's been an absolute pleasure talking all things county cricket and, of course, wrist spin with you on tonight's episode, and you're always welcome back here on the County Cricket Podcast. But that is basically it from us two here at TCCP for tonight's recording. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.